is a touchdown for the 49ers!
Smith in a gun with Gore on his left hip. Third down, Alex takes the snap. Alex looking.
Got it.
Post, and it's got him! Caught! Touchdown, 49ers!
In 1981, Bill Walsh established a football dynasty that lasted for 20 years. The franchise lost its way for a time until a new coach brought back a winning culture.
San Francisco, he shouted, Harbaugh! Harbaugh! Harbaugh is a coach for our return!
What's your deal?
Jim Harbaugh has made the 49ers a contender again. Covering it all is the 49ers Fancast.
Hello, 49ers fans. Welcome to the 49ers Are a Bunch of Losers Fancast. I'm Indiana Jim, and that guy's angry. Sean Farrell. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Farrell.
I'm not angry. I'm perfectly fine. What do you mean? I totally saw that one coming. I called it.
I failed to remember, but maybe you did, you know? Maybe I just wasn't listening. Maybe I was so caught up in the amazingly smashing victories over the New York Jets, you know, the one where the offense was so not underwhelming. And the one against Buffalo where they were actually not underwhelming. So, Sean, we have a situation.
Okay.
And here it is. 49ers are 4-2, and before Monday night, hadn't really beaten any great football teams. Now, a case could have been made for the Green Bay Packers playing at home at Lambeau, but the Packers haven't looked too good until Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
So, after Monday night's thrashing of the Houston Texans in Houston, I think it's safe to say that, yes, the 49ers did, in fact, beat somebody at least once this season. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think I've mentioned before, that we've said in the past that the 49ers play down to their competition and don't beat up lesser opponents. And we saw them beat up, thrash, lesser opponents. And if you don't think the Packers or Lions are really great teams, you may take comfort in the fact that they beat them by a double-digit margin, I think, didn't they?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So, you've got that going for you. So, the Niners, now, it's one thing to lose on the road, you know, and things not going well for you, and you don't get the breaks, and the other team does, and, you know, you score a few, you know, you score some points, but obviously not enough to win, and you lose in convincing fashion on the road. It is quite another to host the defending Super Bowl champions, the ones who denied you your opportunity at the Lombardi, the ones that capitalized on two ill-fated turnovers and still required overtime to beat you. And you lose like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference between those two losses?
I feel like you're setting me up for a trap question here.
It was like a softball, man.
Yeah. No, there's no difference at all.
It's a trap!
I do think there is a difference in that the Vikings game, I look at that game and they just looked kind of tired and just one like half step behind. You know, it wasn't that a complete meltdown. They were just weren't the sharpest team, you know? And this game felt more like a complete meltdown in every phase of the game. So even from the play calling and the coaching too. So all four facets, if we want to include coaching and play calling, just completely fell apart in this one.
Yeah, this is as complete a debacle as I think we've seen, considering all the Nolan and Singletary era problems. Now, granted, we can probably just count on one finger the amount of times this has happened under Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
I just did. One. Okay, good. So we got that out of the way.
But it was a giant finger. Oh, giant. Sorry.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, I know.
A giant foam finger. But you can count on many, many hands the occurrences under the previous two coaches. Here's the point. I get, there's not really a point to it. Point is, the entire team just completely didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Akers couldn't make a kick to save his life. And even Jim Harbaugh, when you go back to the end and you say, okay, why did they lose this game? Jim Harbaugh himself said it. And this was actually specifically brought up by one of the reporters who said was asking about Colin Kaepernick. He said, do you feel like bringing Kaepernick in at that point interrupts the rhythm that you've got with your offense? And he says, yes. He answered yes. And they started asking him about the plan. And he says, well, the plan, I guess it wasn't a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
For a coach to admit that his game plan wasn't very good, that's some honesty right there.
And I think I said to you on Twitter that he had to be honest about it because it was so obvious. You know, denying it would just make him look obstinate.
Like Mike Nolan and Mike Singletary, right?
Right, exactly.
everybody would have known it was coach speak, but by the same token, you almost expect coaches to do that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, well, you expect Andy Reid to come out and go, this was totally on me. This is all my fault. I'm the head coach. I'm responsible. So,
and then fire someone the next
him,
day.
It's just, yeah. Yeah. It's like the guy on, that produces the Football Today podcast. Is that what we're talking about? Football Today? Is that what you said?
About Andy Reid.
Anyway, the Football Today podcast, the guy always talks about Andy Reid bringing his tape recorder because it's the same answer every time they lose. So that's one of the things that irritated me is that they're driving down the field and what was it? It was 3rd and 11. I mean, it was 3rd and long in the red zone or 3rd and something. And you trot Colin Kaepernick out.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the offense has been moving down the field and they did it twice.
Yeah.
And I don't for the life of me understand why you're bringing Kaepernick in to interrupt what Alex Smith is already doing. I mean, he's had the entire drive, and all of a sudden it's 3rd and 11 in the red zone, and you go to the Kaepernick experiment. That, by the way, is my nickname for Colin Kaepernick until he actually does something, is Kaepernick. Because the whole, and it's not his fault. It's not about him. I'm not calling him Kaepernick. I'm just saying the whole package and the whole idea and the whole wild Wolfpack Gernick thing. It's the Kaepernick experiment. It's like sometimes it works, but you're not playing the New York Jets here. You're not playing Buffalo here.
Right. And let me, a slight correction here. It wasn't 3rd and 11 in the red zone because the Niners never even made it into the red zone in this game.
They ended up with a field goal kick, so that's what I'm calling the red zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Which he missed that first one.
Okay, that's my point, though. You're within field goal range, so you're closer to scoring than not scoring,
yeah,
is my point.
Right, right. But to the Wildcat package, as they call it, when they busted it out against the Jets and we hadn't seen it before, I thought, okay, well, that was interesting, unexpected, and picked up a lot of yards on it. All right, and they did against the Bills and with, I would say, mixed success. Yes, got a touchdown out of it, but also he fumbled the ball because he learned that NFL players hit really hard. I'm sure he experienced that in the preseason too, but he definitely met his match on that play against Buffalo. But we haven't talked much about this yet because we didn't record together after the Bills game. I'm not a huge fan of this whole thing. Last time I checked, the only other team who does something like this is the Jets. I'm trying to think if there's another team that does this. I can't think of one right now. There probably is one, but I can't think of one.
Well, there's teams that mess around with it, like, but they don't bring in another guy. I mean, you've got Cam Newton, and you got the guy in Robert Griffin,
yeah,
and, you know,
But that's what I'm referring to, where you actually bring your starting quarterback out, put the second string quarterback in, and have a package of plays for him. I'm not a fan of it when the Jets do it. And to me, to equate Alex Smith with Mark Sanchez, and I'm not a huge Mark Sanchez fan at all, is not a good comparison. And now I understand Colin Kaepernick is on the team. He's taken up a spot. He has a lot of talent and a lot of speed, and he can do different things. I understand all of that. But yeah. I think, you know, this is the NFL, and the quarterback position is that one position where you really need that solidified leader who is in the game,
yeah.
who takes every snap. And that's you would never see the Packers taking Aaron Rodgers out. I'm not trying to say Alex Smith is Aaron Rodgers, but my point is he would never come out so some other quarterback could run a play. You'd never see Peyton Manning come out so that 6'9 freak they have over there in Denver could you know, see over everyone and run a play. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. So I don't like it.
Well, you know what the Alex haters are going to say. They're going to tell you that they don't have Colin Kaepernick on those teams.
Well, it opens up the door to that whole potential quarterback controversy. And over the last four games, I put this on the blog. You know, I feel like Alex has had one really great game, one good game, one okay game, and one terrible game.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the best track record over a four-game span. But you know, that happens. Quarterbacks go through that. I remember a few years ago, Peyton Manning threw, like, multiple interceptions in, like, three or four games in a row. And the Colts are really struggling. Yeah. So it just happens in this game in particular. The whole team really struggled, and Alex showed that he's just like Tom Brady. If he has a lot of pressure, he's going to make that play.
Well, okay, let's go to that because, well, let's get this out of the way first. We're talking about scheme here. You're not going to out-scheme the New York Giants by being tricky.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I don't have a problem with if you really think you've got a great play, bring it out, say, on a first down, or say if you have the lead. You know, you don't bring it out on 3rd and 11 when you have an opportunity to get closer to the end zone.
Or 1st and 10 after a 55-yard completion to Randy Moss.
I know, right? You get your quarterback, he's kind of struggling, and he makes this big-time throw to Randy Moss, a guy you haven't even gotten involved in. Oh, Alex is coming off the field now. It's Colin Kaepernick's turn, who takes an 11-yard loss. Mm-hmm.
Colin's fault. It was a play call that should never have taken place. And I know I'm just repeating what everyone else has said in the media, but it's something I was screaming in my mind at the TV when it happened.
Well, but still, bad play call. But you know, I don't remember seeing the play. I didn't see the play because I was listening to the radio. I assume it was a sack. But
yes,
you know, he's a rookie, right? This is his first year, right?
No,
or is it his second?
Second?
I don't remember.
Second year.
Anyway, you take a guy who has very limited regular season experience, and you're just asking him to do these things, and it's like, what, you know, your quarterback is trying to get his confidence back, makes this big-time throw, and you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were several times that game where I'm just, what are you guys thinking? It's not making any sense what they're doing. They were trying to out-scheme the Giants, and to me, it seemed like, you know, when Kevin Gilbride came out and said what he said about Justin Smith, Harbaugh should have just said nothing. He just said, you know, whatever. That's one guy's opinion, and whatever. Move on. You know, you don't make this big old deal and issue a press release, because to me, it seemed like the Niners came out wanting more to make a statement than to win the game.
Mm.
Hello? You play to win the game. Not make a statement. Not make a point. You know, and that's, to me, that's what it seemed like they were trying to do, because they were just outsmarting themselves. They were getting too cute with it. And I don't know what the defense was doing, but.
Well, the defense, you know, they are human beings, and they were put in tough position after tough position on short fields. And you just, it's not fair to expect them to be in the red zone, basically, when they come on the field, especially on those interceptions in the second half.
Well,
even the long, all the coverage, all the yardage, excuse me, given up on the coverages, they're constantly in short fields. I mean, David Akers misses two field goals, and now they're on a short field. So when you're playing a really good quarterback with really good offensive weapons, and they have a short field to work with, it's not going to turn out well.
Yeah, but you know, even so, at the beginning of the game, I mean, that first drive, the Giants just went right down on.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can, you know, we can talk about short fields as the game progressed, but you know, early on, the defense failed to make any kind of statement at all. I mean, they didn't look ready to play. Let's hand it to the Giants, because if there's one team, any team in the league that's as well coached as I think the Niners are, one of those is the Giants. You know, and you can probably, you know, you take the Giants, you take the Patriots, you take the Packers. You know, those are kind of among your best, your better coached teams. I don't know about the Patriots this year, really, but you know, McCarthy's really good. And take Jeff Fisher. You know, if there's any staff that's as good as Harbaugh's staff, I think it's the Giants. If there's any team that is well prepared, it's the Giants. And they came out with the mentality that we're just going to go to work and do our thing. And, you know, the Niners just didn't, for whatever reason, have that same urgency, I guess. Did it seem like that? I mean, and, you know, it just, as they went along, it's just like, you guys aren't doing the same things that you normally do. This is not your identity. You know, we talk about running the ball. You know, they didn't run it enough, and when they did run it, they tried to do these trickery things, and it's like, you know, you're not playing your game. And and I, you know, I've nothing opposed to Alex coming out throwing, because they did it against Green Bay, they did it against Detroit, and they threw more early and they ran more late. You know, that's the way Bill Walsh did it. You know, there's a lot of coaches that do it that way. I have no problem doing it that way. I just have a problem with, you know, they lost their identity because all of a sudden they're down. They're only down 10 at halftime.
Yeah, it's not time to throw in the towel on Frank Gore. I mean, when Kaepernick has as many touches as Frank Gore, there's a problem.
That is a problem. It's a huge problem. And I don't know what, you know, in the first half, I don't mind that you're being aggressive and throwing the ball down the field. That's fine. Second half, you're only down 10. I mean, I guess the Giants got the ball first. I don't know if they scored on that drive or not. But, you know, I know that the game's not over. So I just think, game plan-wise, they were just trying to be too smart by half, you know, trying to out-trick the Giants, and it just didn't seem to work for me. So you brought up Alex Smith's interceptions.
Yeah.
The one, I think the first one was in maybe the first quarter. I don't remember.
Second quarter.
Second quarter, okay. So after the game,
that's what really
Alex was asked about.
I don't think the interception was the cause of this, but the Niners really had momentum in the first quarter, and it was after that interception that basically the Giants hardly gave the ball back at all in the second quarter. It was just a momentum shift. I think it was a coincidence that worked that way, but that's how it worked. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Because and after the game, Alex Smith kind of, you know, was asked about each of the interceptions. And obviously, I think anybody could tell that he was throwing it up for Delanie to go get it. And Delanie Walker, for some reason, I don't know why, he didn't play the ball like a defender. He was still trying to play the ball like a receiver. And all he could do was tackle the guy that caught the interception. Or hug him as they were going down, whichever way you want to look at it. You know, for some reason, he's not just batting that ball down. I can't for the life of me figure out why, but that's beside the point.
Just tackle the guy, you know?
Yeah, well, he did tackle the guy.
No, before he catches it, just take him out. It's a 10-yard penalty.
Yeah. So he explained and said, you know, that's kind of a jump ball, you know, I guess not a good decision, but he... You know, basically, that's what it was. It was trying to take a chance, trying to take, you know, take a little risk there. Something that people get on him about, yet when he throws an interception, they complain about, so whatever. So there's that. The second interception, and I even said this on the play, Manningham was kind of in the slot there, and it looked to me like the defender was kind of grabbing his jersey a little bit as he was running by. So after the, and I even said this, I said, no, Manningham wasn't held at all on that play. And then, you know, faithful Jamie said, well, that was a terrible throw. And then after the game, Alex says, well, you know, it looked like I was throwing it up there hoping to get a call. And that's what he was doing. He was throwing it hoping to get a call. So he saw basically the same thing I did, only it didn't work out that way. And it's kind of one of those things like, really? What? I mean, I wouldn't, with those safeties out there, I don't know that just chucking it up hoping to get a call is really the right the right approach there. But it makes sense. It makes sense why he did it. It just, you know, sometimes that works. I mean, it worked against New York, you know. They did that several times. And guys were kind of getting held, and they were trying to take advantage of that. The only problem was it wasn't single coverage. There was a safety over the top and whatever. And then the third one, they just baited him into, you know, into throwing it with Amukamara, I guess, back there. Antrell Roll, I think, on that third one. And really, Antrell Roll made a really good play on the ball. It wasn't like he threw it right to the guy, you know. But they essentially baited him into that. And so those are, you know, those are why you have those interceptions. But point is, they were thrown. But here's, I don't know, do you have anything to add to that thing?
Only that the first interception, when it happened, it didn't bother me at all. I remember I said to my friend I was watching the game with, hey, I don't mind them actually taking some shots downfield, even though I'm not sure why Delanie Walker. I mean, I would rather see that ball go to Vernon Davis or Randy Moss or Mario Manningham, who are, they just impress me more. I know Delanie Walker is a nice role player, but sometimes I think, I don't understand why they try to get the ball to him so much when you have all these other guys.
Well, if you remember, Troy Smith threw him a 50-yard jump ball in London, and it paid off. So.
Yeah, he did it once, but Randy Moss has done it 100 times, so I'd rather see Randy Moss down there on that play.
I think it's because Delanie was the guy that had the more favorable matchup, maybe, or single coverage, or I don't know what he saw. But
well, and they ran that same play in the championship game last year, and Delanie was uncovered, and Alex didn't throw the ball. I saw a lot of press written about that. It was the same exact play.
Yeah.
So maybe Alex, he was told, throw the ball this time. We're running the play. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and so, interesting that I heard Colin Cowherd, and I don't always listen to his show, but I generally like the guy. And it was only on for like 5 minutes when I heard him, and I heard him talking about this game. And he said, you know, basically saying that, you know, Alex Smith is incapable of making all the throws you have to make in this league. And, you know, this after, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he was just, you know, praising him upside down and sideways.
Yep, sounds
which
right.
Colin does that based on the winds of change. But
he'll tell you, he's been telling you for years.
Yeah. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I just will.
I said it. I did.
You heard the same thing I did.
Caliendo, yeah.
Yeah. That was great. So what was I going to say? And the other thing he said was, you know, you hear these people keep talking about, oh, Alex Smith doesn't have the ability to bring the team back. You know, when they're down, they just don't know what to do and blah, 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 blah. 5 fourth quarter comebacks last year, first of all. Second of all, he didn't have a problem against Philadelphia, as I recall. And the deficit at halftime was a lot bigger. So, and that was in Philadelphia. So we have seen, basically, here's point number one. We've seen this team play from behind and come back and win, okay? That's the first thing. So it's not something they can't do. Second thing, all the guys will admit or have admitted that when they were down, they were pressing. And you could tell they were pressing. They were trying too hard to make things happen instead of letting the game come to them. Now, part of that is the Giants playing really well defensively. But the other part of that is I could tell Alex during the game, you know, was just hesitating just a little bit each time, and sometimes more than others. But you could tell he was playing slow. You could tell, like, he wanted to deliver the ball and then held it for a second and threw it. And when he starts doing that, you know, normally when he's playing well, he drops back, he sees what he wants, he throws the ball.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's what he did against Green Bay, that's what he did against Detroit, and that's what he did really well against Buffalo.
Of course, he had enough time to make a sandwich back there every time he dropped back against Buffalo.
Well, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, you didn't see him indecisive. And when they've lost, or like Minnesota when the passing game wasn't working, he was indecisive. New York Jets, when the passing game wasn't working, they were taking shots downfield and kind of throwing, you know, taking a few more chances with that game.
No, don't say that about the Jets game, or you'll be accused of being short-sighted and ignorant. But go ahead.
I won't. You might. against New York, when the passing game wasn't working, you could see he was indecisive. He wasn't sure of himself, and for whatever reason, maybe he was like, "Oh, that doesn't look good. I need a great option. I need something better." And in the second half, when after three interceptions have already been thrown, then he starts taking what the defense gives him. And at that point, the defense is just giving him short stuff all day because they're milking out the lead. So, you know, a lot of chatter, of course, about people go, "Oh, see, it's same old Alex Smith," and all this other, you know, all the old arguments come out. And it's like, you're not even looking at why it turned out the way it did. You know, yeah, you know, Alex had a bad game. And one of his worst games in a while. But there is, you know, not an excuse, but there is reasoning behind it. And you can see the reason why. You can see he was indecisive. And, you know, it's all things that are correctable, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, personally, I think physically he's not limited in the throws he can make, I don't think. He's got a strong enough arm that he can throw it deep. Now, he can't throw a 40-yard bullet like Kaepernick did. That was amazing. you know, but we saw the same thing from Nate Davis. And Nate Davis, you know, displayed his huge arm. And, oh, look, Nate Davis is our future. mm-hmm, that worked well. And so I'm not saying Kaepernick is worse than Nate Davis. I'm just saying he's got a big, powerful arm. And that's kind of what it reminded me of. But, I mean, you know, it's 40 yards on a rope. Now, Alex can't do that. I know that. You know, he's going to put some loft under the ball. But point is, he can throw it to any spot on the field, but, you know, perhaps he lacks the mentality of the gunslinger. You know, maybe that's the next step that he has to work on, you know. And this is the other thing that Coward said. He's like, "Oh, teams have a year of film on these guys," and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, that year of film worked real well for the Packers. Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, good one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, what about Rex Ryan? Rex Ryan's supposed to be a great defensive coach, and yeah, they didn't have Darrell Revis, whatever it is. But still, anyway, year of film, that's not the point. I don't think that's what did it. You know, there wasn't a lot of instances where Alex was just fooled into throwing to the wrong place. You know, one of the interceptions, he was fooled on the coverage. So it's like, he was hesitant. The entire team played poorly. It wasn't like it was just him. And the coaching staff just had a horrible game plan. So I think, you know, you take all of those things together and you're going to get what you got.
I think the defense actually did pretty well to only give up field goals when they were in such short yardage situations.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So it could have easily been a 42-3 kind of affair.
Right, but think about this. Coughlin is kind of the same mentality as Harbaugh when you're on the road. Right. Is, you know, you have a lead, you're not pressing, you're not trying to score touchdowns every single time. You do want to eat some clock, and you know, even Eli mentioned they were, you know, trying some things, and they weren't really, you know, pushing it too hard to score touchdowns. You know, I mean, when Bradshaw had his touchdown at the goal line, you know, they kept pushing it, and the defense, you know, eventually gave up the touchdown. But, you know, I'm just saying, they seemed like they didn't know that the Giants were going to run comeback and out routes all game long.
Hmm.
And once they figured out that they weren't running, you know, underneath man with two safeties. For some reason, the Giants receivers on the edge consistently got in front of the corners, you know, and made these 15-yard hook and out pattern catches. And I'm just, you know, they were constantly out of position in coverage. They couldn't get to Eli Manning at all because the offensive line just played outstanding. And, you know, they didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't have it.
Yeah, they played the 49ers game plan. What the 49ers would normally do. And we touched on this earlier, but we need to mention special teams a little more deeply. You know, Akers is 6 of 12 in his last four games, with most of those misses being from, you know, 40-plus yards out. And which means, you know, last year you could pretty much always count on not just the points, but then you get a kickoff deep, and at best, the other team is starting at the 20. So that's a huge field position advantage right now when he's missing these kicks. And then you add in that their kick coverage has not been good. And I say to myself,
oh my gosh, it was even worse this game.
Yeah, it was. And I'm like, was Blake Costanza really that important? He's one guy. I mean, give me a break.
I know.
So they're obviously they're I can't imagine that's the reason, even though he is very good, and I was disappointed to see him go. But I haven't played in the NFL, just as a disclaimer. So I'm not sure exactly what they're doing wrong on special teams. I just know they're not where they're supposed to be because the guys keep returning the ball 45 yards up the field.
Yeah.
And that has to stop.
Yeah. I don't know what that deal is. I don't know if there's a particular spot that Akers isn't getting it to because, you know, we've noticed his accuracy is kind of off and, you know, I don't know if there's something to do with that. You know, I mean, the guy's getting old, so who knows?
That could be it, too.
I don't know how the leg works, but anyway, I think some writer on NFL.com said, oh, the Giants have now exposed the game plan by which you can beat the 49ers, and I don't think that's entirely true. I do think part of it is hope that the 49ers coaches come out with a lousy game plan. You know, I think that's part of it. They just, you know, again, when you start saying, oh, see, Alex Smith is limited and, you know, they just don't have the ability to, and then, you know, just put an ellipsis on the end of that. Basically, to say that, you have to ignore the fact that they stopped giving the ball to Frank Gore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't analyze that game without pointing out that fact.
Right.
You know, someone else has pointed out the fact that, you know, in their two big embarrassing, you know, in these two losses, that's what happened is they stopped, you know, they went away from what they did well. And, you know, it's just, I don't think this is somehow a big indicator of, you know, oh boy, we've got all sorts of problems. Now, to lose this way at home, that's embarrassing. I mean, you know, losing a game on the road to Minnesota, it's like, okay, they played better. We were kind of off. Things just didn't quite go our way. You know, okay, you learn from that. But to lose like this at home, that's flat out embarrassing.
Yep.
And that's the point where you go, okay, we really need to evaluate what we're doing because that didn't work. And I mean, really take stock of what, you know, who you are as a team. And, you know, the best thing about the team, I guess, is that they, you know, they don't point fingers and they don't lay blame. And it's real easy to blame Alex Smith when, you know, when the coaches are just making really weird decisions, too. I mean, it's just blame all around.
Pretty much wraps it up, I think. But I want to ask you about, this is going to be complete conjecture, of course, because we're not there and we don't know. But what's going on with Brandon Jacobs?
He's not playing.
I know. Why? I mean, he's certainly, by all accounts, he's healthy. And they brought him in. I don't know who would not play so he could be dressed. But is he simply there as an insurance policy in case Frank Gore gets hurt?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't know why he was inactive for this game, but, you know, maybe Harbaugh thought that there would be too much emotion involved, or I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
All right.
But we'll have to just kind of wait and see what happens. I mean, Harbaugh may be a little gun shy about the knee. You know, wants to make sure his knee is completely healthy. You know, and we don't absolutely need Brandon Jacobs at this point because it's not for need, you know, that they didn't give the ball to Frank.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I don't know what's going on there. And honestly, I'm not really all that concerned about it unless, you know, it starts to become a real, you know, cancer in the locker room or something.
Right.
But it's, I mean, it's almost starting to look like the Westbrook situation.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
That didn't go so well.
Well, and then when he had a chance to play, he played well.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe they're just kind of holding him back a little bit and, you know, don't want him to go through the full rigors of the full season, just, you know, with the way Frank wears down towards the end. Of course, it's going to be hard for Frank to wear down if you don't give him the football. Okay, so enough about the Giants. Short week, Seattle comes to San Francisco. Judging by the way the Niners usually respond after they lose a game, especially when they lose one at home, and I think, you know, part of in the back of their minds, they could be thinking, you know, they could have been looking forward to Seattle. They could have actually been looking past the Giants for all we know. There could have been some of that, you know, gosh, we've got Seattle coming to town. We really need to win this game so that we can, you know, and I, you know, last word about the Giants game, I think they tried to win it for all the wrong reasons.
Hmm. So, I would go with that. I don't think they look past the Giants, but I could see some of the wisdom in the second part of your comment there, wanting to win the wrong way for the wrong reasons. We already addressed this. So Seattle.
Yeah. So with Seattle coming to town, who do not play well on the road, I mean, they beat New England at their place, right? In Seattle?
In Seattle, yeah.
By 1 point.
Right.
And again, we've visited this again. The NFC West teams, their margin of victory, other than the Niners, the other NFC West teams' margins of victory have always been around, like, four, you know, within 4 points. I think there was one game that Seattle played where they won by more than that, but, you know, by a good, you know, solid margin, but... For the most part, they're winning close games. And the Niners' win margin, when they win, is a lot bigger. Now, granted, again, they've beaten, you know, Detroit and Buffalo and New York and then throw Green Bay in there and then got embarrassed by the Giants. So this will be a big test for them. Now, the great thing for them is that the home team usually plays better on Thursday night than the road team.
Yeah, makes sense.
You know, when you're traveling. Yeah. But the other side of that is Seattle's in the same time zone. So, you know, that the jet lag's not going to be a factor. I don't know if the home crowd will be a factor or what. But, you know, Quest is it's a turf field. They're coming down to Candlestick. That's going to be kind of loose and soggy in the, you know, evening moisture, so there's going to be part of that's going to come into play, I think. But after getting waxed like that, I have to think that the Niners are going to come out and just want to just destroy the next team, and that next team happens to be their biggest division rival.
Well, not only that, but we know Harbaugh and Carroll have their own history to deal with there.
Yeah. Which, again, borders on almost like win for the wrong reason, you know? Which I think Harbaugh's going to have to keep that in check. But, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting because, you know, short rest and whatever, and they didn't really have time to look at the film against the New York Giants. And I think, why would you really want to revisit the film where you only scored a field goal? I mean, you know... You kind of already know what you did wrong in this game.
Yeah.
And like Harbaugh says, you got to dust yourself off and ride. You know, it's like at this point, you can't really sit there and dwell on it. You just have to come out and, you know what you did wrong. You know what you do well. Come out and do it again. And, you know, they've never lost twice in a row under Harbaugh.
I'm looking for, for two things. I'm looking for Russell Wilson, very talented young man, but going into on the road to play the best defense that he's played in his career so far, and they are going to be psyched, and they are going to be looking for blood, I think, after giving up 100 yards and a rushing touchdown.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I think the 49ers are going to ground it out, and they're going to pound Seattle, and the first half might not be very pretty. You know, it might be like a 10-7 kind of thing, but with the idea of wearing Seattle down and playing possession ball in the third and fourth quarter and breaking it open in the fourth quarter.
You know what? I would caution against going with the automatic conventional wisdom that, oh, because of that game, Alex Smith is never going to throw another pass.
Well, I didn't say that. I just think Frank Gore is going to get 20. He's going to get his 20 carries this game, or at least the 17-18 range. And Kendall Hunter is going to get his 6 or 7. And Colin Kaepernick is going to get his 3 or 4. And
I hope
if it
Kaepernick
if it doesn't work that way, that might be because they're playing from behind.
I hope that they just forget the Kaepernick experiment for now. Go out and play real football. Quit trying to fool around with the trickery because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's nice occasionally when you're playing the New York Crapper Jets to have some fun. I get it. I do. But
thanks, Colin.
I've always said, you know,
that's what I said
every time. I did.
I agree with you. I'm with you on that.
Go out and play real man football instead of this gimmicky crap. You know, if you need Kaepernick to throw a 70-yard Hail Mary, bring him out then, okay? But, you know, stop with the option and the read stuff and the, you know, and hey, sometimes it even works when you do it with Alex Smith because, you don't expect him to run that play. But when Kaepernick comes out, you expect one of two things. Either he's going to run the ball or he's going to throw it deep. Those are his two options. And I think defenses are too smart to be fooled by that.
Well, there is one other
option.
And
so I hope...
What's that? He could throw the ball 8 yards over Mario Manningham's head on the sideline.
That's
true. He had that one play. We didn't talk about this. Real quick. Fourth quarter.
The water cooler?
He was in there for 4 plays in a row in the Niners game.
Yeah, the running the no huddle.
Yeah, 4 plays in a row. And he threw the ball, I think it was Manningham, way over his head. Wasn't even close. Manningham didn't even try to jump. He just watched it sail. And it was driving me nuts. Why in the world is he in there for 4 plays in a row unless Alex is hurt? And they showed Alex, and he's just standing there. I almost wish he had this look of just, pissed off bulldog on his face. But he didn't. He was calm and professional the way he is. He's a professional. And
you mean the Cutler face? The Cutler face?
Maybe not that bad. The Philip Rivers face. But anyway, I'm digressing. Yes, I wish they would put that on the back burner and just play ball. But go ahead.
Well, it's like you're down however many points it was at that point. And, we're running the no huddle because we're catching the Giants in a situation where they can't sub. Really? Seriously? You're down that much, and it's come to this that we're running the no huddle so they can't sub? Honestly, really? Ugh. It's just like, you just, unless you're actually benching Alex Smith, you know, fine. Let Kaepernick run a full package of plays and let's see what happens. But, you know, he ran whatever it was, 4. And it's like, what did you accomplish?
Yeah.
You accomplished nothing.
Well, when that fourth play came about, I thought they were benching Smith. I couldn't think of any other reason why he'd be in there that long.
Yeah, it didn't benefit the team. And if you only did it just to bring Alex back out, what's the point? I mean, you know, again, okay, we're rehashing that last week game. Okay. So, I don't know what I'm going to say. My point is, I think a lot of people are expecting, of course they have to get back to what they do best, and that means running the ball all the time and sometimes maybe throwing because, Alex really stinks And, you know, he threw three picks, and Harbaugh's realizing that the luster's falling off the whatever, you know, anything, whatever. My point is, I would not be shocked to see them still do the same way they played against Green Bay and against Detroit, you know, the stuff that worked. Come out and throw early, but smart. You know, they're not going to be stupid about it and not just slinging it around. I think they're going to mix it up, you know, give Alex a chance to get in a rhythm, you know, not put Kaepernick in on third and long on your first drive. I think, you know, I don't think they're going to drastically change the game plan because they don't need to drastically change it because they were 4-1 before this loss. They just need to be smart about what they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, not take risks, not, or unnecessary ones. Don't press, you know. And I would not be surprised to see them, you know, see Alex take some shots downfield early, just because that's part of being a well-rounded offense, in my opinion.
Sounds good to me.
Your turn. I was like, anything else, Sean? Anything. And you know, I can't pick the Niners to win a game anymore. It's just so you don't know what's going to happen, I guess. I mean, you know, the last two wins were over pretty crappy teams. They lost to Minnesota, and then they lost to New York Giants. And it's, you know, I'm hesitant. I'd love to say that they're going to kill the Seahawks. I definitely think they'll be ready. I definitely think they'll be up. And I would hate to be Seattle in this position on Thursday Night Football. And then the Niners get 10 days to prepare for the Cardinals, who now Cobb is hurt.
Right.
And that's a Monday night game. So they actually get 11 days. And then they get a bye week. So, you know, other than this Thursday night turnaround against Seattle, at least they're at home. The schedule makers have kind of been kind. So anyway, I guess that's it for this episode, unless you got anything else.
No, that's it. I think it's sad that we can't say definitively we think the Niners will win this game. I do think they're a better team than Seattle, but Seattle has that kind of weird, I mean, not a destiny or anything like that. I don't think they're going to the Super Bowl, but they have a strange sort of magic about them this year of winning things at the end.
When, je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And if the Seahawks are hanging around, and if it's a one possession game in the fourth quarter, I'm going to be very nervous about that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, and I think but Russell Wilson has not played well on the road. And,
yeah,
you know, their offensive line isn't all that great. So, I expect him to get pressure. I expect the secondary has a lot of pride. And those guys, they're not going to be embarrassed again. And Russell Wilson is no Eli Manning. And Seattle's receivers are not Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks and whoever else they have out there. You know, their defense does concern me a little.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want to see Alex have some real success against a tough defense, and you know, look good doing it. So
with those big corners Seattle has, I'm looking for a lot of 85 and a lot of 21.
Yeah. Who's going to cover Vernon? That's the question. But are those big corners fast, too?
I don't know. I couldn't say.
No.
But I do know that when they can disrupt the pattern at the line of scrimmage, that takes speed out of it a little bit because the timing's now messed up.
Yeah. Well, I think last week, too, Alex tried to work it to Manningham a little more. You know, they tried to force it to him because they were playing the Giants. And I think they kind of went away from the bread and butter, which is, you know, first option Crabtree, second option Vernon.
Right.
So, yeah, anyway. Phone number if you want to get in touch with the show. We'll do voicemail in the next episode. 3477-GO-NINERS. That's 3477-GO, the number 9-ERS. You can email 49ersFanCast@gmail.com. You can follow me and my 49ers tweets on Twitter at 49ersFanCast. And I guess that's it. So I guess we'll talk again later this week, maybe, Sean, or I don't know when.
But soon.
I know that you and I will talk again. That's the most important thing.
Aw, you're so sweet.
I am indeed. So, any last words?
No, I have said my last. Thanks again for letting
fantastic.
Me be here.
Oh, that was great. Oh, you're so welcome. So we offer to you a very hesitant and hopeful Go Niners.
Who's got it better than us?
New York.